Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Rochester, Michigan, and earned a JD in law from Wayne State University Law School. For 4 years, he clerked for Judge Daniel Sawicki, and for 12 years, he was an assistant prosecutor for Oakland County. Since 2013, he's been a judge for the 44th District Court in Michigan. The founder of the Justice 101 program, his name, the Honorable Judge Derek Meineke, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Judge Derek Meineke, who is on the 44th District Court in Michigan since 2013. Judge, welcome. A real honor to have you.
I'm so glad to be here, Jack. Thank you for the invitation.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
That's a great place to start. I appreciate you having the chance to talk about them. My mom, Valerie, my dad, Corky, they raised me. I was born in Grand Rapids. And at the same time, my dad was working for the Grand Rapids Press. Actually, when I was born, he was still at Grand Valley State College at the time, before it was Grand Valley State University. And then he ended up getting a job with the Grand Rapids Press, ultimately working his way to the sports department there. And my mom was a nurse. We moved around different areas in the state of Michigan, usually around where my dad was working. So we were in Grand Rapids until I was in third grade, and then moved to the Bay City area. And he was working for the Bay City Times for a period of time. And then around the time I was in 6th and 7th grade, we moved down to Troy and ultimately settled into Rochester. At the time, my dad was working for the news and then ultimately finished his career with the Detroit Free Press.
What's the biggest thing you learned from dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from mom?
Well, from my dad, I would say the biggest lessons I learned was the importance of connecting with people. He forged such incredible relationships because he always showed genuine interest in people and their stories, and wanted to get to know people in a more personal way beyond the surface level. And in creating relationships, it enriches and provides for a very rewarding life. And that's something that I was able to grasp at a very early age. His connections with people were easily apparent. It used to be a running joke in our family that he was everybody's best man because he stood up in so many weddings, and the way he would connect was real and genuine. And for my mom, I learned about being devoted to one's family. My mom has always put her family first, her children first. Everything that she is, everything that she's about, everything that she has, talents, abilities, she has put into supporting myself, my sisters, and I like to think that in many ways the reason that I'm where I'm at, and I'd like to think the type of parent that I am, came from that model, that example from my mother.
We're talking to Judge Derek Meineke. Judge, where did you get your love for law?
Well, it's...
Your dad was a sports writer.
Well, it's interesting. It's if you think about it, that was my dad's... My dad was a storyteller, and that's the way I like to look at it. My whether it was sports or if it was... It ended up being some other subject matter, he would have been a great storyteller. He was just so happened to have found his way into sports because he naturally loved sports growing up. But at his core, he was a storyteller. And that was the way of to allow him to use his talents and abilities to connect with people. As far as the law goes, when I was growing up, I thought that I wanted to get into some level of public service. You know, that's even in high school, it was very interesting, Jack. I went to my 20-year high school reunion, and I saw at the senior all-night party, they had you put up, where are you going to be in 20 years? And guy wrote up there, I expect I will be in either involved in a campaign or working on a campaign or in some level of government service. And it really floored me because I couldn't remember ever writing that down. But sure enough, it was very much a foreshadowing of what was to come. And so for me, that desire to get into public service, the law seemed a natural conduit to reach those ultimate goals, which would be find a way to serve my community with the skill set that I have.
Speaking of serving your community, there was an iconic judge in the 44th District Court from 82 to 2012, Judge Daniel Sawicki. And you were blessed to clerk for him from 1998 through 2001. Derek, what's the biggest thing you learned from Judge Sawicki?
Well, there are so many things that I learned from him. It's hard to identify which one in particular, whether it's make sure that you know the rules of evidence, make sure that you are ready to go to trial and prepared every step along the way, and how important it is to your client and to your cause that you are prepared and the most prepared person in the room. But I think what I learned from him that I've taken specifically to the bench is that when you're the judge, the court comes first. The needs of the court comes first. And the reason that I say that is because the court is so connected to the community that if you serve the needs of the court, you necessarily serve the needs of the community. I learned from him his commitment to Royal Oak, his commitment to the 44th District Court, and making sure that at all times it was at the forefront of his focus and attention. That I've taken that attention and to detail for the court, and basically my approach has been to look at our community and say, this is an elite community. This is a community that deserves our very best in service, the very best in accessibility, the very best in new and innovative programs. And I can directly tie back that drive and determination to make sure that our citizens have the best court back to Judge Sawicki and the way he conducted himself on a day-to-day basis. When he got on the bench, he was there for the court and ultimately then for the people that the court served.
I've heard it said that the profession of law is a calling.
I agree with that, because you don't just stumble your way into the law and be the type of lawyer that you need to be. If you're not in it, it will show quite quickly to both the client that you're trying to serve, your opponent, and the judge. If you're not in it for the right reasons, you will be exposed quickly. Because ultimately, if you aren't willing to do the preparation, the time and energy and effort that it takes to be the type of lawyer that you need to be, especially, for example, when I was a prosecutor, I spent time, the bulk of my career was in domestic violence, sexual assault cases, elder abuse. And once L. Brooks Patterson actually said that the prosecutor is the only lawyer the victim's ever going to get. And if you're not in it, if it's not something that you're called to do, then in that moment you haven't, you've left that individual in need with a huge gap and ultimately not the measure of justice that they truly deserve. So if it's not a calling for you, then perhaps some other business would be a better choice.
We're talking to Judge Derek Meineke, and from 2001 through 2012, he was an assistant prosecutor for Oakland County. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Judge Derek Meineke. Judge, how was it you decided to become a judge?
Well, I had the opportunity, as we discussed earlier, to work for Judge Sawicki, and I saw the impact that a district court judge could have on his or her community. It is a unique position. You know, there are many types of judges. There are many different levels of courts here in the state of Michigan and beyond, even into the federal system. The district court judge is a unique position. So I wouldn't be able to tell you that I specifically wanted to be a circuit court judge or a court of appeals judge. I wanted to be a district court judge because you are then having the opportunity to have a direct impact on where you live. I live in Royal Oak. So that means that the people that I work with, the individuals that if we're able to turn their lives around, I might run into them at the grocery store or at the Dairy Queen or at the soccer fields or the softball diamonds. And that sort of ability to have the fruits of your efforts right in front of you on a regular basis was very inviting. I wanted to know that the efforts that I would be putting in, time, effort, energy, everything that I had, would result in something that I could actually see, something tangible. And so that was very interesting.
January 23rd, 2013, the first time you put on the black robe, surrounded by your family and loved ones. Derek, what was that like?
Well, it was a culmination of a lifelong dream to find the perfect opportunity to use what skills and talents and ability God has given me to the best possible use for my fellow citizens and my other community members. And to be there on stage with my mom, my son served as the bailiff, and he was, at that time, he was just 11 years old. And my two daughters and my wife, my incredible wife, Mandy, and my mom was there, and then to have my mentor, Judge Swicky, swear in the oath and have my family put the robe on. How do you possibly put that into words?
Does your family let you put the robe on at home anytime?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. Early on, I tried to see if I could get my wife to address me as judge or your honor at home. It surprisingly didn't go over as well as I anticipated. I unfortunately ran into a bit of a brick wall there, Jack.
Not in my home, you don't, okay? What's your basic job as a judge?
All right, well, on a day-to-day basis, we have several different types of legal cases that we deal with. Primarily, the bulk of what we do are criminal law cases, and we deal with all misdemeanor cases. Misdemeanor cases are anything that carries with it a maximum penalty of a year or less. So any charge, a lot of drunk driving second offenses, domestic violence, first and second offense, these are all going to be held in the district court. So oftentimes it's a person's first foray into the criminal justice system. The reason why I was always, another reason why I was very interested in this position is this is a chance. If we get this right, then we don't get into felony behavior. Then we don't get into prison sentences. Then we take care of this issue before there are more substantial and incredibly difficult, destructive ends of behavior. We can get it right now. Also, at the district court, we deal with civil cases that the amount in dispute is less than $25,000. A lot of landlord-tenant cases. We've seen an uptick in some no-fault type of civil cases. But really, the bulk of what we do, I'd say 3.5 days out of the 5 days of the week, they're going to be criminal cases, either from Royal Oak, Berkeley, or from the state prosecutor.
Judge Meineke, you see a litany of a lot of good, decent people who have made a poor decision.
It is interesting, Jack. It's something that I talk about with my son. Did a project at school last year called Mistakes versus Choices. And it's something that we talk about a lot in identifying those things that are mistakes and those things that are choices. Think how many times, Jack, you've ever heard of a politician or somebody who has either done something wrong on their taxes or they've made a poor choice, and they get on out into the public and they say, "Well, I made a mistake." And almost when they say it, the word mistake reduces their culpability, like it's something that could happen to anyone. Well, a mistake is you put the wrong answer on a test, or you're at a party and across the room and you think it's your friend Steve and you walk up close and it's not Steve at all, it's somebody else. Those are honest mistakes, could happen anywhere. But what brings somebody to my court, that's a choice, that's a deliberate choice. If it's a drinking and driving, you choose to drink, you choose to drink to excess, you choose to get behind the wheel of a car. Those are each independent choices. By calling them choices, I try to remind folks that come into my court, you take ownership back over them, because mistakes can happen anytime to any person, but our choices are our own. And if we take control over our choices, we choose not to drink to excess, not to get behind the wheel of the car, you have control over that. And so that's how I'd get a person who is basically a decent person, a good person, because that's what I deal with most of the time. I dealt with the worst of the worst, Jack. I was doing rape cases and murder cases and elder abuse cases. I've seen evil. Most people that walk through my door, they're good people. And we've got to figure out how they got to the moment where they made that negative choice and empower them.
Each day in your courtroom, you see the entire gamut of emotions. Fear, shame, madness, brashness, remorse, hope, uncertainty, embarrassment, denial.
I would say that we do get to experience the entire human emotional experience. And it is always interesting for me to try to navigate and figure out what is real and what is not real. What is emotion that is being used to manipulate, and what is emotion that is real when we've actually reached someone and gotten them to realize that the path they're on is a destructive one. It's hard not to join in. We all have a basic common humanity, that common link. And when someone's sad, it's hard not to join in that. But we have to, I always have to be careful too, because my responsibility is always to be, you know, impartial and focused and making sure that at all times justice is the focus, not whatever emotion is being played out.
We're talking to Judge Derek Meineke, who in 2013, he founded the Justice 101 program. When we come back, we're going to ask him about that. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Judge Derek Meineke, who founded Justice 101 program, which has now reached over 1,500 local fifth grade students. Judge, tell us about Justice 101 program.
When I took the bench, I had had the opportunity as a prosecutor to see other court school type projects. I had seen courts go into the schools and actually conduct court in the school. I had seen students come in and visit. And I was excited about the potential of having a strong court school program in Royal Oak. But what I saw that I truly believe was lacking was the providing of some context for these students. You know, they'd come into court, they'd observe, but they didn't really know what was going on. They might see somebody go to jail. They might see the judge yell at somebody. But were they really getting the messages that would sink in and that they could take with them and utilize later on? And what I thought would work the best in with Justice 101 was if I went in advance and met with the students and prepared them. And then when they came to court, they'd have a knowledge base that they could lean on so that then they would not be so lost when they're in the court. And so we tried it out in May of 2013, and it was a hit. The students really started to grasp the information more. And what class level that we chose was fifth grade, and that was with a specific purpose as well. See, fifth grade is the last year of elementary school, and I wanted to make sure that before students step foot into a middle school, that they would have the information that they would need to make the best possible choices. Because some of the things, Jack, that you and I were dealing with in high school, some of our younger people are dealing with at the junior high level. So we've got to address them sooner. And it also worked out that fifth grade, you know, they're old enough to grasp the information, but still young enough to be wowed by a trip to a court. They're not nearly as jaded or wouldn't think it's as a cool of a field trip. So what happens is I go to, on my lunch hours, this is my Tuesday lunch. I'll be going to 30 fifth grade classes this year. I'm actually towards the end now. 30 fifth grade classes, and I spend my lunch hour talking with them about the court system. I tell them when we begin, you're going to learn about four things. One, you're going to learn about the different levels of courts. Two, you're going to hear about the types of cases you're going to see. So they're learning in advance what kind of cases that they'll see. And then third, you're going to find out how someone leaves this fifth grade classroom and someday becomes eligible to run for judge. And then I leave the fourth section, I always leave room for their questions. And I have said some of the most interesting questions, some of the most curious questions, but also some of the most insightful questions from the most amazing sources. And after they come, after I leave them, they come the next day to court and they watch our probation docket. And they get a chance to see people who have made poor choices but are now doing well. And so they see that, hey, there's a way to come back. But they also see that the court system does hold people accountable, so they see violations too. So they get the whole range of, as you described before, human experience, human emotions. And then from there, they go to the police department, get a tour of the police department, and then afterwards, in a couple weeks, I bring them their certificates, and they are official graduates of the Justice 101 program. And parents, teachers, administrators, the superintendent, the police department, everybody has come together with this program. And it's really a statement of what happens when a community comes together, motivated by something that is good, when an amazing experience can be created for our children. And it inspires me every week that I get a chance to do it.
You let me come for one of those lunches, and then you let me come a day later to be with the students. So I sat in your courtroom one day. And one of the cases, Judge Meineke, was a 21-year-old on probation for marijuana. Tall, slender, handsome young man, well-spoken, and he had kind of gone AWOL, and you decided to put him in jail for 5 days. So the bailiff comes around and handcuffs him, turns him in, I guess, takes him to prison. And his mom was next to me, sitting in the courtroom. And boy, if eyes could talk. The sadness, the pain. When you see the moms in these courtrooms, what screams out to you in their eyes?
I've seen so many different emotions in those eyes. I've seen despair. I've seen frustration in the eyes of those mothers that have tried and tried and tried. I've seen hopefulness that maybe this is the thing that will snap him or her out of this downward spiral. But always, in everyone, whether they're frustrated or angry or if they're devastated in some way, I've always seen that level of love. I truly have always seen love, that they are willing to choose to believe that there's a way back. I've always seen love.
Speaking of love, tomorrow is Father's Day. And you were blessed with a phenomenal dad. He's, to this day, he's a hero to you.
Absolutely.
And we lost him 20 years ago. Tell us about Corky Meineke.
Well, you know, it's hard to even, this segment's not long enough, the show is not long enough for me to put into words what my dad meant to me, to my sisters, to my mom, to his family, to this community, to his profession, to his friends. He was one of a kind. The best compliment that anybody can ever pay me is not, you do a good job on the bench, not, you're a good coach, not, you're a good husband and father. If someone came up to me and said, boy, you are just like your dad, that is the best compliment that anyone can ever pay me. My dad, Jack, I was just starting to learn about him as a man. I knew him as dad. And
you were 21 when he passed.
I was 21. I was 19 when he was diagnosed and 21 when he passed. And so we were just starting that transition that every father and son does from the dad sort of imparting lessons in almost like a downward fashion, you know, father downward to the son who is shorter, to the discussions of equals, to just two men bonded by the father-son relationship. And In many ways, I do feel a little cheated in that I had wished that I could have just one more conversation with him. And then when I have those moments, that feeling is just overwhelmed by gratitude for what I had for 21 years, seeing what everybody else may or may not have had in their relationships with their father. I take 21 years with my dad, 2 years watching him go through one of the most difficult challenges that a human being can endure. And I still would take that versus anybody else that is walking this planet and the relationship they have with their dad. I will take what I had with my dad. He was hilarious, Jack. Funny, caring, thoughtful, class clown combined with a shoulder to cry on. He was... like I said before, he was everybody's best man, and I miss him every day.
He died on March 18th, 1997, and 2 days later, our own Mitch Albom wrote an article, A More Profound Loss, Corky Meineke, 1952 to 1997, Cancer Steals Away Our Kindred Spirit. And here's a piece of that article.
This is how we begin to say goodbye. Corky Meineke was not a sports writer. You don't define a man in such a meager fashion. He was a father, a husband, a dear, wonderful friend, kindred spirit, an unflappable soul with a constant, gentle grin, like a kinder Huck Finn, like a wiser boy next door. He wore turtlenecks and sweaters and gym shoes, and he drank beer, and for all the egos he covered, there wasn't a pretentious bone in his frame. Yes, he wrote sports. That was his job, at times his delight. He wrote well, with flair, with spirit. I remember complimenting him once, when he worked for our competition, the Detroit News, about an opening line of his column, one that he wrote when Jack Nicklaus won his most glorious Masters at the age of 46. Corky wrote, "We can all die now." If only we could pick our spots that way. If only there was justice in death's lottery. Then Corky would live for 100 years, forever shooting jump shots and smirking that grin, as young as his nickname suggested, as beautiful as we all remember him today.
That was a portion of an article that Mitch Albom wrote about the passing of Corky Meineke, Judge Derek Meineke's dad, 20 years ago. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Judge Derek Meineke. And he and Mandy have 3 children, one in high school, one middle schooler, and then one elementary that rules the roost.
She does.
How are you trying to teach them to be great Americans?
Well, my son Drew is a sophomore at Royal Oak High School, and not surprisingly, he has really gravitated towards subjects like government and economics. And he, I will tell you, Jack, the biggest challenge for me right now, each conversation with him is work, because I've got to do my homework, because he's constantly challenging. But why about, what about this? What about this? Did you consider this option? And, you know, at the end of the day, after I've been on the bench all day, I kind of just want to go home and just have a conversation with my son. But then I got to open up all my old political theory books and try to keep up with them. My middle daughter, Kate, we call her San Diego because she's sunny and 70 every day. All right. She's a nice, calm person in the storm. Basically the high intensity that I get from my son, Drew. And then we have my eight-year-old redheaded wonder, Jane, who does definitely rule the roost, and she is in charge, and she lets everybody know it. And you know, one of the things, Jack, I guess maybe this comes from my experience as a domestic violence and sexual assault prosecutor. Both Mandy and I have had discussions about this. I want both of my girls to be comfortable with the word no. And I want them to be comfortable in their own skin and not be seeking to please anybody else, but be the strong, independent women as they grow older. But what I wasn't counting on, Jack, is I wanted a strong, independent young woman at 18. I wasn't ready for one at 8 years old.
The late, great Robert H. Schuller, who had our power from Crystal Cathedral for decades, he once said, and I quote, "The number one thing a dad can do for his children is to love their mom." Why?
Well, I feel like children are always watching people relate to one another, and the relationship that serves as the model for every relationship, romantic relationship they have going forward is their mother and father. And if it's a relationship based on mutual respect, honesty, fidelity, those are important traits, things that people take for granted now, and they are not common. And that's one of the goals that both Mandy and I have when we conduct, you know, our day-to-day relationship. It's, I mean, you know, Jack, when you're a parent and you're having to be in many different places and we both work, it's hard to make sure that we are always the spouses that we are supposed to be to one another. But we have made a mutual commitment. We've been together for a long time. And it's through the mutual respect, admiration, and love that we have for one another that I hope that we're providing a good example for our children and their future relationships.
Another thing I read recently. Anyone can be a father, but it takes a special man to be a dad.
Well, I think the familiarity of the word dad, father, seems like a title, is something that is that you'd see on a birth certificate, as opposed to, I don't think I've ever heard my son run into the room and say, "Hey, father." Perhaps that was something that was done in previous generations, but it's dad. And dad's, that title alone suggests there's a closer connection between the adult male and the children in the household, that there's something that is only created over a period of time of a commitment to being a present parent. If you're a person that is an assistant coach for the kids' team, if you're the one who always drives them to the different places, who always scrapes, you know, cleans up the scrapes on the knee, if you're the person who has been present, you might not be perfect. You might not always make the right call, but as long as you're present, then you're a dad. Then you're a mom. I don't know of any other prerequisites than that. Be present and love them. And that certainly will overcome any, you know, parental errors that you've made.
Speaking of being present and being a present parent, if there's a man tonight listening, Judge, by himself, and he's not in the lives of his kids right now, be they grade school kids, high school kids, college kids, what would you say to him?
My advice would be to look at the current status of his life and whether he truly feels complete or whether there is something missing. And I would argue that if there is something missing, it would be that calling to be the real and present parent that he could be. The other thing that I would say to him is that it's never too late. It's never too late. Yes, if it's been a period of time where you have not been the type of present and loving parent that you should be, that you'll have to work even harder to make inroads. Yes, that is probably a true statement. But knowing the benefits, the joys that come from being a real and present parent in your child's life, it's worth every barrier, every challenge that you might have to overcome to make it a reality. But it's never too late. And even the most frustrated child who is angry and disappointed and resentful, even those children are still yearning and wishing for that relationship.
What would you say to a mom or dad tonight whose heart is broken over a prodigal child right now?
Well, if you think of the story that most people are familiar with, the story of the prodigal son, what is really at the core of that story but hope? And if you have a child that you describe as your prodigal son, that means that you're still hopeful that they'll have a happy, healthy, and safe life. And my advice to them would be live in that hope. Get greedy for that hope. Don't ever allow that to escape. Because as long as there's hope, as long as there's a belief that through love and support that this person can turn around and make better choices for themselves, it'll be worth it in the end. So that would be my advice to them, is that hope that you have, live in it.
You see hundreds of young people each month who have made a bad choice. What do our young people deep down really want today?
That's a very challenging question because I think it is so individual. Each person, and that's really one of the challenges that I have to face on a day-to-day basis, is that the person standing in front of me, you can't apply the same plan or program for the person in front of you that you applied to the person that was called just before them. Every person is different. Every person's needs are different. And that's what makes our job fascinating and challenging at the same time, is figuring out what is the key to understanding what does this person ultimately want. And I think what most people want is just a peaceful, positive existence. And when they get up and when they get up in the day and they feel depressed, or they feel hopeless, or they feel that their needs aren't being met in one way or the other, then they turn to the quick, the easy, the empty promise of certain life choices that end up being ultimately destructive. So I think it's the key ultimately is finding out for each individual person, what is it going to be to lead them on a day-to-day basis to feel good about who they are? And if they feel good about who they are, then a lot of these challenges will go away.
We're talking to Judge Derek Meineke. Judge, Socrates believed that a great judge had four traits: hear courteously, answer wisely, consider soberly, and decide impartially. What are your thoughts on those traits?
I think if a judge sticks to those four traits, then he or she can be the type of judge that each and every litigant, whenever they step foot into a courtroom, that they deserve. Because every citizen deserves to have a judge who is polite and cordial. Now, what I like about that is that you don't ever necessarily have to be the most friendly or go out of your way. I like to think that I'm pretty friendly, but you have to be polite and respectful, and not think that just because you're sitting in a black robe that somehow that has elevated you to being a better human being. Answer wisely. Be prepared. If you don't know what you're talking about, then you have done nobody, you have done no one any favors in your courtroom. Be prepared. Consider soberly. Make sure that you are not inflamed, not someone hasn't made a comment that has frustrated you and caused you to change your position simply because you're angry or upset or frustrated. Take a minute, pause, and consider the right course of action after a quiet reflection. And then decide impartially. Every single person that walks in the courtroom has to know that their judge is not swayed one way or the other by political party, any sort of affiliation within a community. They have to know that they're going to get a fair shot. They might lose, but by goodness, they better have a fair shot.
Judge Derek Meineke, Socrates could have been talking to you about you when he gave those four traits of a great judge. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you.
You got a great future.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.